Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it. Hi, this is Dennis Lee. I'm calling this episode, Making a Difficult Situation a Whole Bunch Better. My guest today is Kathy Townsend, a retired attorney working as a volunteer for the Family Resolutions Specialty Court, using mediation in a whole new way as an alternative for the regular way of doing divorce. Now, here on the Backyard Oasis podcast, we often talk about making transitions, sometimes in careers and in the rest of our lives. I'm thinking there are probably many people out there thinking about divorce. It's just the way life is, right? I think I heard 50% of the people that get married get divorced. Or perhaps maybe there's somebody out there that wants information that they want to give to a friend or loved one. Now, I want to talk about how you got into the law, and then perhaps, Kathy, we should outline how the usual divorce works, and then how the Family Resolutions Specialty Court is different, and how for many it just works better than the usual way of doing things when getting a divorce. Having said that, I think since we're talking about people and the law, why did you become a lawyer?
Well, thank you, Dennis, for having me.
Sure.
And that's a very interesting question. My original plan as I finished high school was to be a teacher. And I started out at Westfield State in the educational program. But in looking for part-time work while I was an undergraduate, I started working at the Westfield Detention Center for the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services. And that got me interested in social work. So I graduated college with a teaching degree, but then moved on and got a social work license. From there, I married and I had three children and thought about where I was going to go with my career. In having a conversation one evening with my husband, he said to me, "What do you really want to do?" And it popped out of my mouth. "I think I want to go to law school." And I did, and became a lawyer, and went into practice with some fellow students who graduated law school with me, doing primarily family law. I was doing family law because I had the social work background. That's where my interest was. And as I progressed in the family law area, doing a lot of divorces, doing a lot of litigation, I began to realize maybe there was a better way. And I began to take some training as a mediator and eventually transitioned my law practice into a mediation practice. And that's where I finished my legal career, was with a mediation practice.
And I think you wrapped up your career officially in 2015. At least that's what you told me.
Yep, that's correct.
Yep.
That's correct.
And so you did regular divorces, and you did regular way of doing divorces.
That's
in your
right.
practice. I mean, you were doing that all the time. That was a regular way of doing the business then.
About halfway through my legal career, when I started getting the mediation training, I began mediating divorces at the same time that I was litigating other divorces. and I began to lose my stomach for litigating divorces. I began to understand the pain, the difficulties, and the hardships that both sides, both spouses in a divorce, were experiencing. And it became harder and harder for me to advocate just for one side, which is what you do as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I stopped taking contested litigation cases and only took mediation cases. That's not to say that everyone who came in to mediate wasn't contested, but most of the time they were able to work through their differences in mediation. And so by the end of my career, working career, I was only doing divorce by mediation.
It sounds like you were kind of under stress. In other words, it sounds like it was so uncomfortable because the usual divorce, in the best of situations, I was driving up here and I made myself chuckle because I thought, thinking, well, divorce is bad, but then some people say, maybe not, I'm getting rid of him or her. So maybe it's not that bad. But ultimately, I think we have to say it's not a good thing. I mean, we all have this thing about walking down the aisle and everything's going to be wonderful. And when you put your gown on or your tuxedo on, you're not thinking about divorce court, I don't think. So this sounds like it was stressful for you.
It was unpleasant. Your responsibility as an attorney is to advocate for your client and your client's interests and your client's rights. And often, if you are advocating for one side, it is not necessarily taking into account what the needs might be on the other side. And on the next day, when I was out of the courthouse and I was mediating with folks, I was able to look at the needs of both sides. And looking at the needs of both sides just made so much more sense for the family, especially when there are children involved, as opposed to just watching out for the needs of one side. And I found that not to be satisfying anymore, the litigation not to be satisfying anymore, and that the mediation, for me, was a much better career move in terms of my goals of being able to assist people in this difficult transition time of their lives.
So how did the specialty court come about? You're involved, I think, with a judge, right?
The specialty court, Family Resolutions Specialty Court.
It's a mouthful.
Yes, and therefore we shortened it to FRISC. We looked for a better acronym, but that was what we ended up with, and so we call it FRISC. FRISC started and is headquartered in the Hampshire Probate and Family Court. The thinking about FRISC probably began about 2010, when I was still actively in my career and not retired, and was attending the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts annual conferences. Folks who worked in courts worldwide would gather annually for this conference, and we would hear about innovative programs in other states and other countries. And Australia had a model that was of some interest to some of us who were practitioners here. And we took a look at the Australian model and thought about replicating it here, but decided it wasn't quite right and decided that we would create something on our own here. The we that were involved, there were a cohort of us, including Linda Fidnick, who just recently retired as the judge of the Hampshire Probate and Family Court, the first justice there. Also included Gail Perlman, who was retired judge from that court. Included Marcia Klein Pruitt, who is at Smith College and is a family researcher and publisher of many studies, and myself. the four of us put our heads together and began to think about what we might like to have do here. And we put together a program that involved teamwork in terms of assisting folks who were coming in for a divorce. Both spouses need to opt in to the specialty court. When they opt into the specialty court, what they are provided with is a mental health professional and a mediator, and in some cases, an attorney for their child when that may be appropriate. The two spouses may or may not have their own attorneys, and if they do, they are part of the team as well as the two spouses getting the divorce. And the team assists the family in moving through the divorce, where everyone's rights are continued to be supported, but everyone's needs are also being supported. So there is no this side, that side. This is a family who's making a transition from one household to two households. And how do they do that? Taking into account what they need to be thinking about in terms of parenting their children from two households? And how do they do that in terms of making the best use of the financial resources that the family brings to the table so that both households can survive and so that both parents can have a household that can be a home to the children?
Wow. So it's really a whole bunch different than the original divorce deal, if you will. I'm looking at all these things that you have talked about. I thought it was interesting. You focus on needs, not rights, communication, self-expression. And then I saw one that I thought was really interesting. It's really informal. It's not a courtroom, so it's less intimidating.
Well, that's interesting how that is fashioned. All of the appearances in front of the judge do take place in a courtroom. However, the courtroom is not set up traditionally with the judge sitting up on the bench and the parties and the lawyers back behind tables. What happens is that there is a conference room table that is set up in the courtroom. And the judge sits at one end of the table. And on each side of the judge, across the table from one another, are the two spouses. Sitting on the other side of each spouse is their attorney, if they have an attorney. And then the rest of the team, the mediator, the family consultant, who is the mental health professional, the attorney for the child, if there is one. There's also a team coordinator who kind of oversees the team and makes sure that things move along. They all sit around the table. And the judge comes out. The informality works like this. Everyone on the team, lawyers, spouses, the mental health folks, everybody addresses one another by first name. The judge is still called Your Honor or Judge, whoever. But everyone else on the team is by first names. The rules of evidence that are in place for usual court appearances are relaxed. Doesn't mean they go away. It means they're relaxed. And so things like hearsay, which is in a hearing where you're not supposed to repeat something that someone else said, because that's hearsay. It's the original person who's supposed to come in and say whatever it was that needed to be said. The hearsay is allowed. Most of the talking is done between the judge and the two spouses. If the spouses have lawyers, the lawyers are there to support and to be helpful to their respective clients, but the judge is interested in what the parents have to say. The judge starts the court conference, which, by the way, we don't call hearings. We don't call it a motion session. We don't call it a trial. Any appearance with the judge is called a court conference. Whether the judge is making decisions about things or whether the judge is just going to be offering some guidance on things, it's called a court conference.
So you're speaking English instead of legal jargon.
That's correct.
Right.
And that's an effort that we all make not to use all the legalese language that is so common in the courts. The first thing the judge does when the judge meets the two spouses for the first time is asks for a picture of their children. And the usually both parents supply pictures, and this conversation about the children. Tell me about your children, the judge will say, and each spouse will talk about the children. And it sets off the hearing, the court conference, in an informal and in a pleasant way, and in a way that both parents have something that they're sharing, something in common. It's not starting off with some big argument about something.
That's really interesting. I mean, that because you talk about your kids, you feel better. I know you're a grandparent, and I was looking over some of your material, and you said one of the things you love in life is dealing with your kids and your grandkids. And so even under a ridiculously difficult situation, it makes you feel better if you're looking at your smiling kid.
Well, that's the thought behind it, and in fact, I think that's very true.
Yeah. Who is eligible to do this?
Anybody.
Now, anybody from anywhere? Now, are we talking Hampshire County, Franklin County? What's the usual situation?
The court rules say the specialty court is established and sits in Hampshire County. It can take cases from any of the four western divisions. So that would be Berkshire, Franklin, Hampden, and Hampshire. If someone who is doing a divorce is not living in Hampshire County, and their divorce normally would be in one of the other three Western Mass divisions, then the court rules have them file their divorce in the regular manner in their home court, the county that they live in, and then the court system transfers the case to Hampshire directly to the specialty court, and then all of their activities and what happens with them happens in Hampshire.
Who is it for when we talk about this? Is it, in your experience, who is it for and who is it not for?
It's set up for any family with children. Does not have to be a divorce. It can be a parenting case where the parents are unmarried, and it can be a post-divorce case where the parents have been divorced, but now a new issue has come up. So it's primarily for parents. It's not for folks who don't have children. Sometimes the question gets asked, well, what if there's domestic violence? The family is not automatically precluded from using FRISC if there's been domestic violence. There's an intake procedure whereby that is taken a look at, and if it's going to be safe, then the and it's going to make sense, then the domestic violence is not going to necessarily be a bar.
So do you screen people? How does it work? Somebody calls you up, calls the court, calls you. What is the process like? Somebody is listening today, and they think, well, I might need this information. I could use the service. What's that like? What happens?
When they call in, they usually will be directed to the program director, who is Miriam Burke, and she will speak to them on the phone initially, and give them some information. The next thing that happens is that they come in and have an intake conference with her. There's some paperwork that needs to be done. The paperwork includes a parent questionnaire that's about an 8-page questionnaire about their parenting, plus the regular court filings that are required in order to get the matter into the court and being properly processed. There's also the Corey Carey checks. Anyone who comes into court to do a divorce has their criminal records checked. And that's one of the ways that we would learn whether there was domestic violence or not, whether there had been a restraining order or not. Mm-hmm. Certainly possible that there was domestic violence without a restraining order.
How about the cost?
No cost. There is a filing fee cost to the court, which is there for anybody filing a divorce, whether it's a traditional divorce or whether it's in frisk. But there is no cost to the family for the mediation. They're entitled to up to 10 hours of time with a mediator. They're entitled to a similar amount of time with the mental health professional. And the attorney for the child is provided by the Hampshire County Bar Association. They have a grant, and they have a program where they have attorneys for the children. So folks coming into Frisk to do their divorce or to take care of whatever matter they're there for have no costs except what everyone has for filing fees with the court.
That's amazing, and it seems so supportive. I mean, it really sounds so different than we might have experienced in the past.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's I don't want to make it sound too easy on our end, because it is a challenge operating a team. Because you have the mental health professional who's working with the family on maybe on communication skills or perhaps some other issues along those lines, and who are helping them put together a post-divorce parenting plan. What is it going to look like in terms of the time that the kids will have with each parent after the divorce? Who's going to be responsible for making the major decisions about a child's medical care, educational care? The two parents are going to live in two different towns. What school is the child going to go to? Which town? Who's going to make that decision? So the mental health consultant helps make those decisions. The mediator frequently focuses on the financial decisions. Who's got the higher income? Who needs how much money to run which households? How is that going to happen? Is someone going to have to have some sort of reduction in their standard of living? Is someone going to have to go to work? Is someone going to go back to school? How are they going to financially support this family? What are they going to do about their assets? There's one home now. Is someone going to stay in that home, or is that home going to be sold and they'll both get new homes? What about their debts, all the credit card debt? What about the car loans? All of those things need to be considered and thought about. What about the health insurance? Who's carrying that health insurance now? And what are the regulations associated with it as to who can stay on after divorce and for how long, and what does it cost? What about life insurance? Does this family have life insurance? What about taxes? Who's going to get the deductions for the kids? If the kids are older, what about college expenses? How is that going to be taken care of? So these are all things that are addressed in a standard traditional divorce, but are looked at in the Frisk court from the perspective of how can this family move on and take care of all these things in the best way possible. Let's not fight about it. Let's find a solution that's going to use whatever is out there that's available for them and that will allow them to make this transition and to move on.
It seems to me you were talking about the stress of being a litigant earlier. We talked about that. You didn't like that. You were uncomfortable with that. So this seems to be a lot different for you, too. Just when you're talking about it, it has a more positive feel.
It certainly has a more positive feel. And in the long run, if you look at the traditional manner of doing a divorce and the Frisk manner of doing divorce, it's pretty obvious that the Frisk manner of doing divorce meets most people's needs better. However, that's not to say that the folks going through the divorce aren't feeling just as much pain, just as much turmoil, just as much emotional upset as in a traditional divorce. It's just that the whole divorce process isn't making it worse, mm-hmm. which so often happens in the traditional divorce.
How about dealing with clients? I'm thinking about dealing with people in my own life, and some people you like, some people you don't, some people you have no feelings about. As a lawyer, and you're dealing with these people, what happens when you have a client? Do you have to like them? I guess that's the question I thought of the other night. You know, like, suppose I don't like them, but I have to represent them. How do you deal with that?
I think that's something that lawyers learn to do early on. Social workers learn to do early on. I think everybody has their own method of being supportive and being on the side of their client in some way, shape, or form. For me, I just always looked for something that I could connect with, that I had something that I liked, some place they came from, some job they had, something they did. There are always those who have a bone to pick, no matter how hard you try. But I think it's just part of your learning in your profession that you find your ways to be able to deal with those folks. I can tell you there were many a mediation that I did that when the folks walked out and went home that day, I was very relieved that I had a break and that I wasn't dealing with their crises at that moment any longer. But you come back fresh. They come back fresh. And you start in again. I'm not going to minimize that there are those folks that just can get at you over and over and over again. But I think that happens anywhere in the world. You have a neighbor, you have a relative, it's, you know, the in-law, it's the person down the street, something's just never right. And it's your own coping skills, I think, that you develop in order to be able to continue to work with those folks.
That's amazing to listen to you. And you, as you talk about it, I'm watching you, and you're smiling, talking about some of these experiences. Do you take the cases home with you? When you have a bad case, for example, or some of these people that are not nice, and you have a family, I know you have grandkids, and I know you are very much into your own background and Irish culture and other things. So does that take you away? But when you come home, are you sometimes wound up and really aggravated and you have to deal with your own life?
Could ask my husband that.
I think I will. I know him. I think I'm going to make a phone call today.
Actually, that's just another coping skill that people deal with, professionals have to deal with, some more successfully than others. When I was in practice early on in my law practice, I made a promise to myself that I would not bring my work home. I didn't answer my telephone at home. There were no cell phones then anyway, but I didn't answer my home phone. And if a client found my number and called, they were just told that I wasn't available. I didn't bring the work home. If I had something that had to get done for the next day and it wasn't done by 6 o'clock when I went home for dinner, I'd go back down to my office at 8:30 after the kids went to bed. bed and I would take care of it in my office. Times have changed. I don't think that that's happening or is practical to happen for folks anymore. It's so many people are working out of home offices right now. But I learned early on to leave it there. So, of course, you come home carrying the emotions and the feelings. But I worked hard to find ways to have that dissipate and not have it carry over into my family life. And for the most part, I can do that. Not everybody can. It really does. Some people really do. Some professionals do carry people's problems with them as if they were their own. But somebody told me very early on, you did not create this problem. It is not your responsibility to make sure it gets fixed. You just do your job.
I think I heard that from Bill Belichick. That's what he's always saying.
Oh, is that right?
Do your job when talking about the Patriots. This is a whole bunch more important. Is there anything we left out? And I also want to ask you that, but I also, if somebody is listening and wants help, give me a number, give me a contact, or what do they do?
They call the Hampshire Probate and Family Court. I don't have the number off the top of my head.
That's quite all right. We'll get it.
And they can ask for information about Frisk, or they can ask for Miriam Burke, or they can go on the internet and look up Hampshire Probate Family and Family Court, and under that heading, they will find a whole section on Frisk.
Wonderful. Well, Kathy, thanks so much for all of your time that you put in for lots of people in the work volunteering. I mean, you don't get paid for this. You're doing this because you want to help people. And so I hope you have more time for your grandkids and your Irish music, which I know that you love, your Lithuanian heritage. This is all stuff that you're involved in. I hope you have enough time for that. And Kathy Townsend, thanks for being with us for Backyard Oasis. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819. If you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.